Welcome to the third preseason Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2019. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Yeah, good. We're tackling the part of the ground that you have previously been questioning in terms of how you're actually going to structure up, and that's the rucks, mate. So how do you feel about that?
I am here under sufferance. You have forced me to go for the rucks a bit earlier than I would have been hoping.
Yeah, I've been struggling a little bit more with the back line, with, I think, a little bit more variables with the kick-ins and stuff like that. So I pushed to have that on next week instead. So thank you for accommodating, mate. There's less players to consider, but that doesn't mean the decisions are any easier. If anything, that's sort of concentrated the difficulty in the rucks, and I'm sure we'll get into that fairly shortly. But before we do, let's plug, as we do each week, Mark, our patrons, our loyal supporters who chip in a little bit from their pockets each week to help out the running costs of the show and to give us some confidence going forward into the season that we've got a decent supporter base to rely on. So thank you very much, patrons. We've had, I think, another 10 of you join on in the last week. So very, very much appreciative of that. We did release the bonus EP 2 last week. In that bonus forward show, Mark, we covered some forwards that we didn't quite get to in the main show. So Jack Zeeble, Blake Akers, Scott Lysette, Taylor Walker, Jeremy Cameron, Rory Lobb, Charlie Kerno, Jamie Elliott, Joey Danaher, and Darcy Moore. And we looked at the impact of new rules on Supercoach forward. So if you're looking for an extra little incentive to support the show and get some bonus content, please sign on up and you'll get access to all our bonus episodes. Mark, we're going to do the same as we've done the last 2 weeks and record a little bonus at least 20 minutes after the Rock Show this week as well.
Awesome.
And we'll also just plug our Supercoach Coach ranked leagues and our Supercoach Coach group that we give shout outs to over the course of the season. So don't forget to sign up to both of those. And the details for that are on the podcast page themselves and also scattered via our social media pipes. But if you can't find that, please feel free to reach out to us via admin@supercoachcoach.com.au or via our social media direct messages, and we'll get those details to you as well. Mark, we actually caught up for a bit of dinner last night and watched a bit of the JLT, and we also got to watch Essendon Carlton. As of recording this right now, there's the North Melbourne St Kilda game on in the background. So we're starting to get into a little bit of Supercoach, but we won't have seen sort of most of the games that have played across the weekend at time of recording. Two games in, Mark, where are you sitting on how the rules have changed things? Have you noticed much at all?
Well, clearly my first point is that JLT obviously means nothing because Bombers didn't win. Neither did the Cats as well. But yeah, there's probably a little bit more space for the clearance players in the center. And I think it will open up to some more one-on-one contests up forward at the moment and potentially teams getting it out of their back half a little bit quicker, hopefully, with those. I know that a lot of kicks are going sort of 60, 70 meters out now instead of short into the pocket.
Yeah, I did notice Geelong didn't do that a heap. We did kick it into the pocket a few times, so that was a little bit odd. But overall, I agree, Mark. It's very hard to tell with the first JLT game, especially how the game's going to have changed or going to change in 2019, especially when you know some of that up and down play might just be caused by lack of sort of fitness or poor skills, leading to sort of more mistakes and more turnovers and a more open ground because of that. So we will have to watch a little bit more closely, and hopefully next week will give us a better indication as well. As we structure our shows each year during the preseason, we tackle the four positional shows. So if you haven't listened to the first two shows already, we have already covered the midfielders in the first show and the forwards in our last show. So go back and have a listen to that. Next week, we'll be covering the defenders. And then in the final week, in the lead up to lockout, we'll be covering the rookies and giving a recap on the JLT and calling out any mid prices that we've seen sort of bolt or dip down or call out any injuries or anything like that. So that's normally one of the key shows to the year, Mark, and where we start to look a little bit more closely at team structure. So even for this Ruck show, we will spend a little bit less time looking at sort of Archie Smith and Zach Clark sort of types until we get to that last show of the season.
Yep, makes sense, mate. It's unfortunately, we'd love to do those shows now, but we just don't have enough information.
Mm-hmm. And with that, Mark, let's get straight into it and talk about the top two rucks of last year and what seem like a likely candidates for the top two rucks again this year. And that's Brody Grundy at 708K and Maxi Gawn at 692K. Grundy averaged 130.4 and Gawn 127.5, both clearly head and shoulders above the rest of the field, with the next best ruck coming in at 105.7. Seven being Steph, and then after that dropping down to that 101 mark. So there's a very, very clear difference between the top two rucks and everyone else. And oftentimes that means we just sort of lock them in and throw away the keys. But let's get into them individually at a little bit more sort of detail discuss some of the question marks that might be coming up on their heads. And the first one is Brody Grundy. Now, to me, at age 24, with the dominance that he already brings to the game and the fact that he's so versatile as an additional midfielder, and the fact that Collingwood made it to the granny last year, he certainly looks like an attractive option to continue on into this year. There was a little bit of sort of preseason injury concerns, though, was there not, Mark?
Yeah, I think Jordan Ruffhead stood on his toe, which put him out of practice for about 3 weeks, but does seem like he's going all right. And all those factors that you mentioned, his age and just the fact that he doesn't rely on tap work to get his points, means that, yeah, it's hard to see him going back too far. It doesn't seem like he's going to go up much from 130, so he doesn't seem to present much value, but it might be hard to win it without him if he's going sort of 20 points better than most other ruckmen.
So I take it he's one that's locked in your team then?
Yeah, I think it'd be hard to start without him. Like, you're really, really gambling on him having a poor start to the year. And someone that didn't own Grundy for a lot of last year, waiting for a poor game from Grundy can be quite a painful experience.
Yeah, that was a bit disappointing for me, Mark, that this year you'll probably be suiting up with Grundy, because last year I got to niggle you a fair bit with that selection, so that was pretty good. It sounds like then, Mark, if you have a bit more question marks over how your ruck team is going to look like then for 2019, then there's probably the next bloke that you've got some more question marks about, and that's Gawn. He's 27, so a little bit older, but by no means past it as a ruckman. They actually, if anything, tend to sort of start peaking at this sort of age. But of course, yeah. Braden Pruce moving from North Melbourne to Melbourne has been causing a lot of the noise around Maxi Gawn. Is that what has got you worried as well, mate?
I think so. I think that spending $700,000 on two rucks also just seems really hard to take for me. I'm not sure that that's going to be a great starting strategy very often. I guess the only way that it works out is if they both do continue to average 20 more than any other ruck. And if they do, then that will work out.
I thought this sort of harks back to the old Cox and Sandilands days from when we first started Supercoach, mate.
Yeah.
We used to recommend that as a pretty locked and away strategy.
It was, and it was essential to actually have those guys back then. They were different times though, mate. We've got a few more trades these days, and the pricing is a little bit different, I think, as well, and scoring is a little bit different. And at 700K for two guys seems like an awful lot of money to be putting into those two spots. And I guess that in the last couple of years, Pruce has been said, yeah, he's going to play, don't pick Goldstein, blah, 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 but he never ended up playing. So maybe that'll happen again and Gawn will be named without Pruce round one. And then what do you do? I'm not sure. They may use Pruce as a depending on the opposition each week. I just don't see Gawn being capable of averaging anywhere near 127 if Pruce plays 10 plus games. I think that sort of automatically takes 10 to 15 points off his average.
I mean, even if he drops 10 to 15 points, you're still talking about him beating the next best ruck by, you know, at least 6-7 points on last year's averages.
Yeah, I think that if you pick him and he averages 10 to 15 points less, you'd be pretty upset about it, and there would be other teams that would be able to get a leg up against you. So I think that is a pretty dire situation, to be honest. You don't seem too concerned by that. So maybe that means that you're looking at the two big gun rucks?
Yeah, a little bit more. I mean, I'm a pretty strong likelihood to start the two, and we'll get into the other options shortly. But to me, let's say you start a bloke at 550K instead. You're saving 150K, and while I acknowledge that's reasonable difference in savings and allow you to invest that elsewhere in your starting team. At the same time, you're going to have to eventually, in my eyes, invest in a side swap to Gorn as long as he stays sort of the top two rucks by, even if it's 5 to 10 points more than the next best, not the same sort of 20-point difference that it is today, that's still be enough to sort of warrant you moving into that selection by the end of the season. And based off sort of such a small differential in dollar savings, 150 grand, I'm not sure it's worth stuffing around with an extra trade or risking him scoring 160 points in the first few rounds while you don't have him,
yeah.
And really making a point of difference at the start. So
I disagree with that a fair bit.
I'm happy to be sold on a value selection.
I disagree with the fact that if he's 10 points higher than the player that you pick for a decent amount cheaper that you would want to be trading into Gorn. I just don't think that that's how the game works. Like, you get to mid-season and 10 points a game is only 100 points. So, yeah, I don't think that that's actually going to be what would happen. It would have to remain at the 20-point difference that it is now. And I think you're also potentially setting up a bit of a straw man there that we're comparing him to a $550,000 ruck, which I'm not sure is a realistic comparison because, like, who is that $550,000 ruck, which we're going to get to? You're probably actually going to be going cheaper than that, realistically. And I just think that, like, how often have rucks actually backed up a 120-plus season? Like, even going back to Cox and Zanderlands, I don't have their stats in front of me, but memory serves me, Cox was pretty up and down from year to year. Sandy's been up and down from year to year. A lot of it's to do with ruckmen are probably more exposed to injury than anyone else on the park, so it's really hard for them to have really consistent high-scoring seasons. So to think that two rucks priced so highly will both go back-to-back 125 when I'm really not sure how many rucks have ever done that in the past, that concerns me a lot. So I expect one of them to drop off. I think you have to gamble either way. And then you start getting into the who would be replacing and what sort of value would make up the difference. And I guess that's what we'll get to a bit later in the show.
Even though a 5 to 10 point difference may not seem like a lot, if you have them in hot patches and chuck the captaincy on them when they're scoring, you know, 160 or manage 125 for a certain patch in time, like, it's easy to understate that, yes, a 10-point differential isn't worth a lot when you could potentially save an additional 100K. But when we get to the pointy end of the season, especially with 30 trades left, I find that trying to maximize your team ceiling becomes quite a big part about the end game, more so than trying to find value. If anything, I found that quite a few teams end up with enough cash to bring spare players onto the bench in the last half of the year compared to when we only had 20 trades, for example. So look, we'll get into the players and I think it'll be a little bit more of a pointed comparison once we get to some of the alternatives. But I guess the other point I'd like to mention is that Gorn is one of the most elite hit-out ruckmen in the competition. He ranks elite for hit-outs, total hit-outs, hit-outs to advantage and hit-outs to advantage ratio. And with the game potentially opening up and center clearances meaning a little bit more with that starting structure, that could really benefit Gorn because instead of having less congestion, he gets more hit-outs to advantage in clean space. And the other part is he's one of the best interceptors as a ruckman. And so in a game where you might see a little bit more sort of fast movement, Gorn with his height and ability to intercept the ball is a pretty valuable asset to have to sort of try and plug gaps and sort of stop those counterattacks going forward. So I don't think that the changes, potential changes to game style work against him as well, and they might potentially work for him. Let's get on to the other options, Mark, because I think
we're... Just on that.
Yeah.
I thought just one more point. Gorn is an absolute gun. He averaged 127 last year, 118 a couple of years ago. Like, don't think for a second that I'm knocking his supercoach capability. And I think we're getting more into playing the odds and strategy here rather than is Gorn a good player?
Yeah, no. And I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying that when we talk about risk of downside, I think it's also probably worth noting that Gorn might not be at his upside. Like, he can still sort of score more. The game changes might help with that. The fact that he's 27 is also something that's sort of to his advantage. And to your point previously, Mark, if Proust does what Proust normally does and not get any games, you'd be pretty damn sore about Gorn not being in your team.
I'm not sure that he has an upside from 127.
Yeah, well, I guess that was kind of the point to what I was saying before, that I'd present that counterpoint that he could potentially have some upside. So it wasn't to argue against the point that he's not a good Supercoach selection, but just when we talk about downside, I potentially see upside. And we can definitely disagree on that. All right, let's move on to talking about some of the actual options on offer for Gawn.
Well, it sounds like you don't actually need to do any more of this show, mate. Sounds like you're done.
Well,
You've got your two picks. That's all you need.
Let's go with sort of a percentage, Mark. What likelihood are you of not starting Gawn?
Well, can I rephrase that? So the likelihood of me starting Grundy and Gawn together would be a little bit less than 20%.
Okay, right.
And the likelihood of you starting the two?
60%.
Okay, so there is a reason to do the rest of the show.
Yeah, there is. And I'm just arguing for it because I think there's a good argument to starting with these two rocks. If anything, to me, that should be the default position, and we should actively sort of challenge that. But if you are sort of coming from the other position where you see that as not being the starting position, then I want to argue for that as a starting point, because it's a rarity that we've had two blokes that's averaged 20 more than their counterparts in a previous season. And that's the situation we find ourselves in today. And they're the incumbents that we are going to try and unseat as we get through the rest of these options. And I'm not completely closed off to that, but I just want to start with that position that these are the guys to beat, and for pretty damn good reason as well. And we shouldn't sort of discount Gawn just because Preuss is coming into the fold.
Yeah. And I guess just to summarize, my position is that you say it's a real rarity to have two rucks average 20 more than anyone else. And I agree with that. And I think that the chances of that backing up are quite low, just from a long-term statistical perspective.
All right, let's move on to the actual selections now, Mark. We spent a lot of time on Gawn and Grundy, but I think that is the crux of the show. And so the remaining players that we talk through will sort of bring to life and some color into the conversation we've been having so far. So the first section of players that we're going to look at are the value selections. And we got a question from one of our patrons, Scott Pantlin, and he's asked, we have previously seen top price players drop over the first few rounds and offer some value. So that's a bit to your point there, Mark. Would you consider taking a Goldie and either a Gawn or Grundy and hoping one of those drop in the first few rounds? It's a bit of a risky strategy, but he can't see them averaging 140 each for the first part of the season. And as a counterpoint to that, Aiden Malia has asked whether Mark will start with fucking Goldstein at 548K. He's trolled you in the past as you brought him in almost, was it mid-season, Mark? And he floundered a little bit.
What's this kid's name? I think, that's not cool, Aiden. No, I will not be starting fucking Goldstein.
But seriously, though, Goldstein is one of the options that potentially presents a good use case, a good sort of...
Man, that name just burns my ears.
He's averaged 128 in the past, which is a long, long time ago, and he seems to have dropped off a fair bit as a player since then. But he averaged 101 last season, and he plays for a team with a lot of center clearance beast. So if we're talking about teams benefiting from the 666 starting structure, you could see North Melbourne definitely benefiting from that, and the Ruckman jamming it down their throats to get more hit outs to advantage as well, something that he did drop off on last year.
Yeah, and he started a good first half against the Saints as well, but just be mindful that the Saints don't seem to have a ruckman at all in that game, so don't read too much into that. No, absolutely not Todd Goldstein. He's into 11th season now, a bit past his peak. The first question about would you pick someone like Goldstein if you thought that maybe Gawn or Grundy might get off to a slow start of the year, I think that is... No, I don't think that that's a very good strategy at all, just because you'd have to have your player that you pick go up a significant amount to make it worthwhile and the other player go down. And that's a pretty big gamble that they're like gambling on of a 3 to 6 week period of scoring. Your chances of you getting that right are not great, I don't think. So, and how much are they really going to drop off? If your player goes up 15 points and that player goes down 15 points, are you still going to be in the mood to actually swap? Are you going to have other priorities come into your team? That's not a strategy that I would take at all. That doesn't mean that I won't be considering a strategy that involves trading into Gawn or Grundy at some point during the season. It'll just probably be more like a mid-season aim rather than a early upgrade aim.
Yep, 100% agree with that. And for that reason, I think it is an extremely risky strategy trying to pick a player that's in that sort of 460K plus bracket, and even more risky when we're talking about blokes that are closer to that 550K range. We've got a lot of previous favorite selections in the rucks that are hovering around that range. And the main reason for that is Gorn is still very much a big contender for finishing up in the top two. So you want to be able to plan to bring him in. And so as to my point before, Mark, when I brought up a 550K player as an example, that doesn't offer you enough flexibility or potential value gain to offset the risk of not starting Maxi Gorn. You might end up trading a 550K that moves up to 600K for Max Gorn at 650K, who's dropped down from 690K. And having a burner trade on that early when you're trying to continually upgrade your team is not something that's very beneficial or potentially achievable if you're trying to do a one up, one down. You don't really have the time for side swaps early on in the season.
I think if you're so sure about Gorn, which you seem to be, like, so your strategy would be either start with Gorn or look to get Gorn in as soon as possible, then I think you may as well just start with him or go for like a really, really cheap option. I don't think going for any of these middle value guys is a good idea, because like if you're picking someone 450 up, you should be picking them as a keeper.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. And are you sort of sitting on the same point of view as me?
I'm not as strong, mate. Not as strong. I don't think that starting Gorn, like if I didn't start with him, then that doesn't mean that like he's in my definite plans. Like there are some thoughts and strategies around picking a player where Gorn doesn't likely come in. And I just and basically the gamble becomes there. Okay, so I pick someone 450 to 500K and they go up in their scoring by, say, 15 points. Gorn comes down by 15 points and I get a win out of that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm looking forward to this because I'm going to be in this Grundy situation again where you're like, well, can't swap my 105 out for 115. I'll be like, choo-choo, bring it home. Let's go, Gorn. All right, let's get to some other options, Mark. Sammy Jacobs at 456K. Is that sort of at a price range where you might consider him a worthwhile selection to keep in the long term?
Yeah.
He's averaged 115 in the past and averaged 84 last year off an injured preseason, I think, but still played the 22 games. He is Mr. Reliable in the rucks, which is definitely something to consider in the rucks.
He has missed four games since 2012. That's amazing for the rucks. But he has only averaged over 100 three times in that period, with 115 being his ceiling, and that was quite a while ago now. So can he, at 31, get back to 110 plus scoring, which is what you'd probably be really aiming for? You'd want at least 105 plus. Look, I don't think it's totally out of the question. He would be one of the couple of players that I would consider in that bracket, just because, like, from what I understand, he was carrying an injury last year. And is a lot fitter this year, so that could provide a natural sort of, like, for someone of his quality, maybe a 20 point boost in scoring. They also have Jenkins playing up forward, so even though there are a couple of other rucks around at the Crows now, probably unlikely they really get games unless there's some injuries around. So yeah, Jacobs is definitely someone that is a massive gamble, but is in that bracket where you could consider him being someone that works out against Gorn. Yeah, absolutely.
Very proud of the fact, Mark. We picked him in 2014 when he jumped up 30 points in average, played 22 games and averaged 115, 100%. But I think the game's gone past a bloke like him a little bit. When you look at the Gorn Grundy types and, you know, even Cruiser to that matter, they're young ruckman, Ryder, Martin, they're just more dynamic, ability to cover the grounds a little bit better, ability to use the ball at ground levels a little bit better. I don't see him returning to a 100-plus average, and I just wish Dunny was here to just hose down all this talk, because he started Jacobs last year and absolutely detested it.
I tell him not to last year, though. Like, seasons are different.
No, I agree with that. But he does offer 10 points more value this year. I don't see him as a 100-plus averaging rock. And I think, to your point before, if you saw him as a keeper and somebody who you'd want to compete against the top two rocks, even, you know, offering value aside, you'd want them to be hitting 100-plus average. I just don't see that sort of happening.
I would take that bet. I reckon he will average over 100 this year. Whether that means he's a good pick or not, I'm not sure.
All right. Let me just bookmark this and we'll get some sort of bet going and you can take a walk of shame at the end.
Shame. Shame.
All right. How about another bloke who has a bit more upside that I just referenced, a bit cheaper, Matthew Cruiser, 433K. He averaged 110 the season before, 80 last year. When I did bring him up in the pre-show, you did mention the injury concerns, which is probably front of mind for most.
Bit of knee surgery and may play round one is my understanding. Mm-hmm. So I think given his history with injury, that means he is a clear no. Did I start him last year or something stupid? I'm pretty sure I had him in my team last year. So... yeah, this is maybe why I didn't want to do the ruck show.
Sounds like you have a bad record with these rucks, mate. Maybe you should come join my camp.
I've got a bloody great record with rucks, mate. I've got a great record with rucks. Like getting the Jacobs one right, getting the Witts year right. Like I do have a great year record with rucks. But yeah, last year there was a fair bit of pain and I don't appreciate how much laughing you're doing right now.
All right. Just before we get to the next bracket of players, I just want to plug our Patreon group prize. We're going to give away $250, a cap and a Supercoach Coach Stubby holder to the winner of our Patreon group overall at the end of the season. So if you're keen to get involved with that, please sign up and you'll be sent out our group code. And last year, Mark, we actually hit 249, almost 250 patrons. And this year, we've got a bit of a target to get 300 patrons supporting the show, especially with the increased amount of content that we're planning to do this year. And so if we hit that 300 patron target, we'll also be giving out $100 and a cap and a stubby holder to the highest weekly overall scorer by the end of the year. So tell your mates to get involved and hopefully we hit that 300 Patreon mark, which would give us a lot of confidence sort of heading into the season, Mark.
Yeah, 300 is an awesome number and that sounds like we've got a bit of an army behind us.
Awesome. All right, Mark, let's jump into the rest of the show and head to the ruck forwards now. So we did cover some of these guys in our forward show because you could potentially start them in the forward line and provide a little bit of a foil if you're going with a riskier rookie strategy in the rucks, which we'll cover in a little bit. But you could definitely also start them in the rucks and look to pivot them forward to finish as your F6 or as a swing cover player with the intent of bringing in a Gawn potentially after you've slid in value or a Grundy later down the track. So Justin Westhoff, Scott Lissette, and Rory Lobb are the three options. So, Mark, what do you reckon? Would you potentially consider starting one of these ruck forwards in your ruck line as your R2?
Absolutely not this year, mate. I think that it would depend. If the right player was there, I would. But I think that Lissette is going to struggle as the second ruck at Port with his scoring. I wouldn't expect a lot more than last year. Lobb is a very good scorer as a number one ruckman, but he's indicated he doesn't want to play that role this year. And Freo do have a few other options. And Westhoff had best season ever when there was quite a few injuries that allowed him to roam a bit more freely at Port. So I can't see any three of them being great value at their current price. I guess out of the three, you would pick Westhoff, but considering he doesn't present any value, that's a bit of a tricky selection.
So it's less the ruck forward position as such and more the players that we have on offer. I'm guessing if there was a strong ruck forward option, that'd be a pretty good player to start as your R2 and allow you that flexibility without having to invest, you know, the 700K for Gawn and Grundy.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know how much I love a ruck forward. Over the years, we've been pretty keen to get them into the team, like Paddy Ryder, players like that. But this year, I just don't see which one you would pick.
So if you saw Westhoff dropping off, let's say, 5 points per game and going to a 95 average, but you saw Gawn dropping a heap more, for example, would Westhoff be a worthwhile R2 selection, even if he does drop off by a little bit, considering he'd be valuable ruck cover throughout the course of the season? So you might recoup some points that way as well.
That's pretty far-fetched to really make that exactly work. Like, you'd have to be, you'd have to team him up with another ruck forward rookie. There's not a clear candidate for that, as far as I'm aware. You would also have to be
clear that 95 as a forward was going to be a good enough average to compete with the top six forwards. Yeah, that's getting a bit into the woods for me. What about you?
Yeah, look, if I'm not proceeding with a Gorn type, this category of players would tempt me a fair bit. And so if I thought that one of these three could average 95, on top of the fact that they offer ruck cover over the course of the year, even if you don't start with a ruck forward rookie, I think that seems like a pretty tempting option for me. A lot of the rucks tend to miss games throughout the course of the season. We've been pretty good so far with Grundy, but Gorn has been a candidate for being injured, for example, in the past. So I think over the course of the season, that it might sort of come up that having a ruck forward might even save you a trade. So I don't mind if they're not a value selection as long as they can make it into the top six forwards. And there are definitely question marks over Lysette and Lobb's ability to do that. But Westhoff, even if he drops off a little bit, might still tempt me in. But then again, you're only saving 150K off Gorn. So you've got to question whether or not it's worthwhile.
Yeah. I just think that it's a really tricky decision to make for your starting team to do that, because if, say, Gorn, being the player, misses a game, you're relying on Westhoff to be playing that week and to be able to move forward, and for you to be able to move your rookie forward ruck into the forward line, and that not cost you a donut as well. So you're hoping to not be exposed from that side, or you move that rookie ruck forward and you're exposing sort of like your last forward bench spot, which can often be 30 points. So the gains aren't quite as significant as they might seem.
Agree with that. That's probably a good call out to make. Lob's one that I'm a bit surprised that you're not a bit more tempted on, Mark, at 412K. I know you were considering him in the last off season, and he will be, I think, a bit more permanently staged up forward, and that's probably why you're less keen on him than when he was at GWS.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if Cruiser was injured, like the other Lobby would be someone that would tempt me, but Rory Lobb just not even in the frame for me.
All right, let's move off the ruck forwards now and talk about some step ladder selection. So ideally, I think if you were to pass up on Gorn, you'd like to pick a guy who gives you a whole bunch of value. So if we could find a bloke that's returning from injury or that's going to take over that number one mantle spot that you know we've picked successfully in the past, like a Witz type, for example. Yeah, they could be a really, really...
I can feel where this is going.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of stepladder selection options, unfortunately, up for, on offer. One of them, and probably...
Well, there is one.
Yeah, that's Tim English, who we have picked the last couple of years.
Not who I was thinking about.
Oh, no. Okay, who are you thinking about? Lewis Pierce?
No, someone that's suspended for the first two rounds because of a video that went viral.
Shane Mumford,
yeah, he has had some really good averages in the past, averaged over 110 on two occasions. And if he wasn't suspended for those first two rounds, I reckon he'd be in a lot of teams at 320,000.
But with his suspension?
With his suspension, you would be relying on a pretty complicated pairing with a rookie ruck that was going to play. So there's a few candidates of who that rookie ruck might be, and play the rookie ruck for 2 weeks and then have Mumford come in. It's a pretty convoluted strategy, and you're missing 2 weeks of scoring from Mumford. But it is a if Mumford was playing round one, he would be 80% plus to make my team. So it's at least a strategy kind of in consideration.
Because he's suspended, what percentage chance would you give him starting your team, mate?
10 at this stage.
So you'd want, you know, a Smith, a Fort, or a Clark to be starting in round one, and you having some level of confidence that they're not going to score, you know, 30 and 40, but be a decent rookie averaging sort of 60 or 70.
Yeah, and then you're relying on Mumford to go on an average 95 plus. So there's a lot of ifs in that. Yeah, the suspension does make it tricky. But I think that the player that you mentioned was Tim English coming into his third year.
Yep.
Played two games in 2017, seven last year, but... just the way that the Dogs' ruck situation looks like at the moment. Roughhead's gone. Campbell went to the Kangaroos. Boyd has an ongoing injury that he doesn't look like he's going to be recovering from anytime soon. So it really looks like it's all going to fall on English's shoulder.
I think they're saying 8 to 12 weeks for Boyd before he gets back to full training. So he's got a bit of runway there, Mark.
Yeah, and even then, does Boyd come in as the number one ruck, or what's his role? So, and English has put on up to 10 kilos in the last 12 months, 21, third season, you're probably not going to get the 105 average that you need, but Sol Rock, he's not the tap ruckman sort of guy. He's the around the ground possession sort of ruckman. So I think he'll be a really good scorer one day, and I think he's someone that'll be in a lot of our teams. But does he present enough value at his current price with only 9 games in his history? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think if he was maybe 280 or less, he'd be a lot more obvious a pick. And I know we're sort of nitpicking on about only 30K there, but being up slightly above 300 is a little bit more painful. His major competition for that ruck spot for the first half of the year would be Trengove, who you'd assume is unlikely to take that number one mantle spot solely for that entirety. And with coaches sort of discussing potentially going back to 2 ruck options with the changing in rules, that could also bode well for Tim English getting more number one ruck time. As you mentioned, Mark, he's finally hit 100 plus kilos after putting on a fair bit of weight over the last few years. This is the first time he's completed a full preseason. So the first 2 years, developing ruckman, developing body, did not complete all the sessions. This is the first year he's completed all the preseason sessions, which definitely is good things to be hearing about a potential selection. He would be maybe a 20% chance to sort of start my team. I think if I was going to give up on the Grundy Gorn double up, I would be looking for a value selection like English or Pierce, who we might have a bit more of a chat about now if you don't have any further comments on Tim.
No. So Lewis Pierce-Sainter did get injured in NAB in the first round of NAB, plus Billy Longer, I think, is expected back like round 2 or 3. And Longer would take the number one ruck role. So I just think that there's no way I'd be going anywhere near a Saint ruck in your starting team.
The benefit to Lewis is that he is priced at 236K. He is in his 7th year and as a 24-year-old has a mature body now. He did play 3 games at the end of last year. So he took over that mantle at the end of last year for the Saints, scored 97, 60 and 29. So struggled against good ruck opposition, but seemed to get a reasonable amount of the pill in the first game, which is somewhat promising. I think the other consideration there, apart from Longer, Mark, is that Josh Bruce is in talks to potentially take some ruck time before Longer comes back. And Rowan Marshall played, I think, 11 games last year, and he spent a fair bit of time as the second ruck. So there's a bit of competition for spots, but which is unfortunate because his price point's really pretty attractive, I reckon.
Even at 230,000, I reckon you want to be pretty sure that they're at least going to be getting games, even if it's as the second ruck. And I don't think that you can be with Lewis Pierce.
Yeah.
So, question for you. You had to pick English or Mumford. Who would it be?
That will largely depend on the rookies that are available. I would be leaning toward Mumford if we have any clarity that maybe even Archie Smith, Clark, or Fort, like all of them look like they potentially might not even suit up round one. But if you get decent confidence in one of them suiting up and scoring all right in the JLT, I'd go with Mumford. Otherwise, English.
Okay, makes sense.
How about yourself, mate?
I think it's pretty close. I am a big English fan. I'd probably lean towards the Mumford option in the case that you're talking about. But yeah, I could see English going on to average 85 plus over the course of the year.
I think the one downside to English is that even if he does average 85, he's going to be plugging away with sort of 70s, 80s, 90s. He seems like a pretty consistent type of player because he can rack up that pill around the ground, Mark, but he also just doesn't seem like he's at the spot yet to dominate a game and have, you know, a massive 130 score that will see his price really spike. At 300K, I'm not looking for a keeper ruckman, and you'd be sort of a bit naive, I think, to hope Mumford was that because of his injury history in the past as well. But, you know, he could very easily have a couple of monster games in a row, shoot up to the 500-plus bracket, and then to be able to trade him for a genuine premium ruck option. All right, for the last topic for the Ruck Show, Mark, let's talk about some of these rookie rucks. So we won't get into the specifics of the rookies, but more just to have a chat about the likelihood of potentially starting one on field, which we have had some previous success with, the option doesn't often come up. But when it does, it can be pretty profitable because especially if they're playing as the number one ruck, they just get more opportunities around the grounds than other rookies who have to fight with other positional spots on field to actually touch the ball. So we got a question here from Chris Todd. He's seriously considering running with the following strategy, and that's to have Grundy at R1, have Clark at R2, and Darcy Ford at R3. What do you reckon of Chris, one of our Patreons, his strategy, mate? What do you reckon?
Well, I think that when we're considering this question, we should put Archie Smith into that discussion, as he could be either of those spots, R2 and R3. Realistically, you don't need both the R2 and the R3 to be playing. You could just get the R2 and it could work out really, really well for you. I think that you mentioned an interesting fact in your introduction to this topic, which was that if they're the number one ruck, and I'm not sure that those guys are really in consideration for that spot unless there's an injury. Smith maybe the most, if Martin potentially was, he's had a tricky preseason, if he played up forward a little bit more. If Bell Chambers is fit, Clark will not be the number one ruck of the Bombers. Based on Stanley's performance and Fort's performance in the first JLT game, Fort seems very unlikely to get the number one mantle at this current stage, even though he seemed a good chance a few weeks ago. So I think that almost rules out any of them being the number one ruck unless we see some injury. So from that perspective, I'd be more open to starting them if there was two available. So two players are playing a second ruck. It gives you more flexibility about who to play on field each week. If they're playing a second ruck, they might not be in every single game. And so I think that this is a wait and see. This is my preferred strategy, to be honest, is one premium, two rookies to start the season. But I'm not sure that we're going to be able to do it. And I'm not sure we're going to know whether we're going to be able to do it until the really last minute. So once teams are selected. So at this stage, I may even have two teams planned, one planned with a rookie ruck at R2 and one planned with an alternative to that, and go with whichever one, depending on team selections.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point about their likelihood of playing R2. And we haven't had many R2s over the last few years because most teams moved to that single ruck combination. But do remember when we did live in the times of having those second rucks available, they often struggled to actually score points because about 30% of the game they'd get that opportunity to have the first chop out in the rucks. But apart from that, they're kind of hiding in the forward line or sitting on the bench. And these are ruckmen either playing in the forward line or not getting opportunities by scoring on the bench. And sometimes they'd score sort of as low as 30s and sort of as high as sort of 80s, unless they had sort of a big spike and big game. But, you know, a 50, 60, 70 average for the better rucks, second rucks, isn't sort of that unusual as a pattern. So to have young ruckmen coming in as a second ruck and having the play on field may not be sort of the best option, where, you know, at least if you have a rookie on field in the forward line or in the midfield or on the back line, there's a chance that they might get their hands a bit more on the pill and you might end up with a score closer to the 90s than potentially if you're stuck with low scoring second ruck options.
Yeah, so as much as it's my favorite strategy, it does make it a little bit tricky to pick it.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I think of all the options of me not starting Gorn, it is also my preferred. Hopefully, well, not hopefully, but if there was an injury in the rucks or something at those clubs to their first ruckman, that would change the game a fair bit over the next few weeks. So wait and see. All right, Mark, any final thoughts for our rucks episode, mate? I think we didn't cover a heap of options, but just because we've got such a standout number one and number two, the prism in which we assess a lot of these ruck options is a lot more harsh because they either have to have that high scoring potential or be able to offer up at least some value.
Yeah, I still don't know what I'm going to do, to be completely honest. I think that while I said that there's a 20% chance I'd start Gorn, that's still a decent chance of that happening. So, yeah, I'm really, really open to the next couple of weeks and thinking this through and trying to get the right options out. And I think that part of what I've spoken about on the show is that I really don't want to start Gorn and Grundy, but if but I will if I'm not left with any other options. Like if I just don't see the value in the mid-range price ruckman or the rookie ruckman just don't come through in a way that I'm happy with, then I'll just end up probably having to go with Gorn and Grundy, which will have significant impacts on the rest of my team.
All right, mate. Sounds like we converged a little bit by the end of the show there. I think, if anything, it's sort of I started from the position where that was my default, but I'm looking for alternatives, whereas yours is you start off by looking for alternatives, but you might sort of settle on that option. But as we went through the options there unfortunately, weren't sort of any standouts.
Yep.
All right, mate. That wraps up our Ruck episode. For our patrons, watch out for a bonus, a little bit of content that we're going to record. And for those of you who haven't heard of our Supercoach Coach Discord channel before, Discord is essentially a chat app or message board that you can go into and have. It's probably really strong for game day banter, injuries and laid outs and that sort of thing. We have about 50 people on there at the moment. So if you're looking to get involved, details of that are also available via the podcast page or through our forum/website. Jump on board. And the patrons, of course, have their own private channel to have a chat behind closed doors as a little bonus as well. And with that, Mark, we'll wrap it up. And next week, we will cover the back line. I hope you're looking forward to that one.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to you being completely confused on the show, a bit like I was today.
Awesome. All right, thanks for the show, mate. Catch you next week. See ya.
See ya. Let's get crazy.